Hello everyone, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo episode 133. This is Jonathan Metz, your host. I'm here with the regular crew, John, James, Greg, and we have a special guest, Neil Ronahan, staff writer for NintendoWorldReport.com.
Oh!
Ronahan? Are you serious?
Yes, the G is silent.
I never knew.
Mind Ronahan. Is blown.
All right.
Mind blown.
Just for those listening at home, Neil and Johnny spent like, 20 minutes going practicing on this, and somehow that didn't come up.
Well, no, because when you're having a conversation with someone, you generally don't talk about their name unless you're meeting them for the first time. But
Ronahan, that's so medieval.
Yes. Ronahan,
like no. The spelling of the name versus how it's pronounced. It's like Sir Ronahan of I don't know something. Badass a lot. How's about
yeah.
that?
Yeah,
I'll take that.
I'm gonna go take a nap. Let me know when we're ready to go.
Please just continue.
Oh, we are ready. We're rolling. So we asked Neil to be on the show this week because he attended New York Comic Con last weekend. As many of you probably know, you've been following his great coverage on the website. So we just wanted to talk to him and throw some questions, bounce some ideas off of him, and find out more about what he played at the show, because there were quite a few video games. So Neil will be talking about that in his new business, and then he'll be sticking around later in the show for our retroactive game number 2, which is Luigi's Mansion. So with that, I think we better get rolling, and the first person for new business is going to be John Lindemann.
I don't have a whole lot of new business. I've actually been doing a lot of site-related work this week. Finally, got the awards up.
Yeah, I want to know who actually upped the date on that so it went out.
Yeah, I don't know either. I have no idea.
That was because I got an email and it said, is the award supposed to be out yet? I'm like, no. And then I went to the website. Oh my God, they're out. Who did this?
I didn't do it.
I was like, what the fuck? So, since they went visible, there have been at least like 6 edits to it, including the addition of awards because.
Well, that's the whole thing. Well, that was the worst thing was when it actually appeared on the site. That night, I was going to get the last of the awards, add them in, and put it live.
But it was almost done.
Yeah, it was completely done. Aside from those last couple of awards, it actually
went live, and I had just finished. I was doing my edit through. I had gotten through exactly the halfway point, and I was going to come back after dinner and finish the rest of it. And at some point in that interim, it went live.
Yeah. That was crazy, but these are the behind-the-scenes kind of trials and tribulations that we deal with. But, so that's pretty much been it. Played a little bit of Castlevania 3, and also, of course, Luigi's Mansion, but we'll talk about that later on. So that's pretty much it for me.
Okay. That's cool. All right, so I'm up next with new business. I've also been playing Castlevania 3. I downloaded it a few weeks ago when it first came out, but I didn't really play it until just this past week. And I'm making some good progress. I got Sypha, which is referred to as him in the game, not just in the manual. And Sypha is a piece of crap, man. He or she really totally worthless. But Grant's not that good either. Like the support characters all kind of suck except for Alucard, I think. But I haven't gotten to Alucard yet. So right now I'm on the ghost ship. It's kind of like a pirate ship or something. At least that's kind of what it looks like. And that level has some fucking annoying stuff in it. And it's really long. It's one of the few levels with a mini-boss, because you fight this Medusa halfway through, and then there's like a whole other huge section of it. So that's what I'm struggling through right now, but I'm so glad that game has continues. Unlimited continues. Because I've been using them. I played a lot of Burnout Paradise this week, because they launched that update for it where it kind of has some tweaked graphics. It has a restart function, which I've been using liberally this week. And they added a couple other small things to it.
Is that the one with the DeLorean and Ecto-1 in it?
No, those are going to be sold separately.
Of course
and they're not out yet anyway.
Are they out? Okay, they're not out yet.
No, they're not out yet. I'm assuming they're going to be like $1 each. I can't imagine paying more than that because it already has like 75 cars in it, and I'm not sure I'll ever unlock all of them. So, I might pay for the DeLorean because it's cool, but I'm not buying those other ones. Are you, Neil? I mean, I know you've got.
I don't have the game yet. I've thought about it.
But you should get
it. I played the demo recently, and I liked it a lot, but I haven't gotten around to getting it yet.
It's $20 new, and that's an incredible deal.
It is.
The price is definitely right.
Yeah. You know, I wish I had bought that, because I actually went out, and it came down to that and another game. And now I'm angry, because it's been perfect, because like I talked about it with E3, but oh well.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not too late, man.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Well, the thing is now, what's that party pack they have out for it? Is that like everything?
I think that's only on PC.
That's the thing.
No, the party pack is available on every version. And it's $10. It's for it's literally for when you have people over in a party kind of setting, because it's all single screen multiplayer, so you just pass the controller. You just take turns and pass the controller. And I've heard it's fun, but when I have people over, we're probably gonna play a Wii game.
Yeah.
Or Rock Band. We're not gonna play Burnout Paradise. I'm not gonna get people to do that. So it's just, for me, it's not worth it. And actually, I was arguing with some people over at GAF, which is always a bad idea. Mm-hmm. But there were some people coming on there saying, you guys should all buy Party Pack because it supports all the great free updates that Criterion has been giving.
Then they're not free.
There's no disputing Criterion has been putting up a lot of very significant updates that have been free to the consumer. But those updates are all paid for with advertising revenue because, you know, the game has billboards and they sell those ads. And the free updates, the upgrades they keep putting in there are ways to get people to come back and keep playing it and keep mm-hmm. viewing the ads.
Yep.
So those updates pay for themselves. And the party pack will pay for itself or it won't, you know. But I'm not going to buy it to falsely subsidize something else that they're doing that's not really related. No.
You're pulling your charity dollars from NBC now, Johnny. Dear me, come on.
Anyway, Burnout Paradise is still great, and the restart helps a lot, a lot.
Yeah.
To make it less frustrating than Mirror's Edge, which I got today. I've only played for like an hour, but holy crap, that game is frustrating as hell, and for really bad reasons. Yeah, I just finished the first chapter, and I was telling Neil about this before we started, but at the end of the first chapter, you climb up this ladder, and then you walk over, and there's this like hanging clothesline that you're supposed to shimmy down to get to a lower part, and that basically ends the level, you know, and then it saves, and you get an achievement. And you approach this line from the side, which you've never done through the tutorial or early in the level, and there's no way to know how you're supposed to jump up and grab this thing, because I played through that section 5 or 6 times, and every time I went up to it, I tried something different. I tried, like, wall running up the side of the post that the cable's attached to. I tried jumping out in the air so I would catch it when I cross paths with it. I tried doing that at a couple different angles. I tried holding down the jump button as I got to it so that she would grab on. When that didn't work, I tried jumping at it and then pressing it again to see if that would make her grab on it. And when it finally did work, I couldn't tell you what I did differently. So that shit drives me absolutely fucking nuts. Because
that was really, like, the only part of the game that annoyed me was how they have those moments where, like, you need to do this very, very precise, like, movement, and you have no room for error. Like, I know, Johnny, you made a comment earlier about how there's not much fudge factor for it.
I don't think there's any. Like, you have to be standing in exactly the right place and push the button at exactly the right time. And because you can't see her feet and you can't really see what her hands are doing, and it's difficult to judge the distances because it's all in first person, it's not clear to the player what the player's doing right or what the player's doing wrong. And so it just becomes very frustrating, and it all feels very, I don't know, it's killing me. It's killing me. I've only played for an hour, and I already hate it. But I'm going to keep playing it because I really like the concept. I like the idea. I'm just, the controls and the execution of it, I'm not sure about yet. I have major reservations about this game. John, did you play it?
No, I haven't played it. But that's the thing. It's like I read quite a bit about it, and I don't really remember anybody kind of bringing up that issue with it. You know, like
are you throwing down there, John?
No.
Are you saying at it?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that with something that's that pronounced, I'm surprised that I didn't hear somebody, you know, complaining about it. You know, like
maybe it may not be that a lot of people have this exact problem in that in this exact place, but I have heard a lot of people complain about.
No, I mean, in general, you know, you'd hear people say as a kind of preface for their comments about the game, "You will die a lot." You know, that was the
and
kind
you
of
do.
Thing. So
right.
it doesn't surprise me in particular what Johnny's saying.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I die a lot in Castlevania 3. But when I die,
yeah,
I know
I mean,
why
there is
I die.
A difference between simply dying with frequency and having something that's kind of sort of peculiar and idiosyncratic in how it ends up you dying or not.
Right. So yeah, there's that. And then We Speak. I haven't really played this exactly, but okay, it's kind of funny. I was getting a haircut the other day, and there's a Circuit City like right. really close to where I get my haircut. So I was like, I'm going to walk in there and see what they've got on clearance, because, you know, all the stores are shutting down, and it's been a few weeks, there's probably not much left, but I'll scavenge over, like a vulture, over the remains of the store. And I went in there, and their gaming stuff was pretty thin, pretty pathetic. No Wii Points cards or Xbox Points cards or anything like that. They told me that those went pretty fast. But they did have a Wii Speak. A new We Speak, and it was 30% off, which means it was $20, basically. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to buy Animal Crossing, that's for damn sure. And I'm sure there will be at least one or two games out by the end of the year that I will want to have for We Speak, you know.
Like the Conduit.
Yeah, I don't know for sure if I'll buy the Conduit, there's a chance I might, but hopefully Nintendo's going to announce some games that support it. You'd think at some point they might support their own peripheral, but yeah.
Could be like the expansion pack. You know, they didn't really support that very much. They developed one game that used
it. They published at least two or three
but they were Rare's games.
There was Majora's Mask.
But I said one. Can you name more than one that they supported with a game that they developed?
Yes.
I'm thinking there must be one, but it's not coming to me right now. I mean, you have a very strong point,
Greg. Must have
not
been very good.
Yeah, you have a very strong point there, Greg.
Yeah.
But anyway, I figure it's kind of an investment for the future, so I picked up We Speak for $20. And
I would do the same, Johnny. I would do exactly the same
there
if
you
I
go.
Saw it. I mean, why not?
I
mean, something,
don't have a game for it.
Yeah, I mean, something cool is bound to use it, so.
Well,
I'm surprised there's nothing for WiiWare, or I guess the infrastructure is a little tough to do on the kind of budget that WiiWare games get, but hopefully there will be some games that I can use it for at some point down the road.
I mean, I would like to see it not be like the typical kind of thing where Nintendo makes something really cool like that and then just kind of puts it out there, a couple of games use it, and then it's like abandoned. You know, like, I think of voice chat on the DS. Like, they put it in, you know, that last Pokemon game, and you never hear from it again, really.
Well, I think Fire Emblem has it, and Advance Wars, the latter Advance Wars has it, but in general,
Star Fox had it.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're talking about something that's built into the DS, you know? It's not even a peripheral. It's not even an adoption rate issue to create that, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an understandable concern, but as Neil points out with the Conduit, maybe third parties will run with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's the end of my new business, and James is next.
So, you know, like everybody else, I played some Luigi's Mansion, but, you know, I'm trying to wrap up a project at work, so I went and bought myself another game to enjoy in sparkling HD, and...
Ah, oh, boo hiss.
On your enormous 24-inch screen.
Yes, my computer monitor that...
Legible text aside, HD on a screen of that size is somewhat redundant.
Yeah, a little bit, but it does the color is...
Yeah, well, that the component, is it component or HDMI? Either way, the color is far superior through that.
And what I thought would be a good game for me was Armored Core, which has the dumbest surname ever, Four Answer. And it's a pun because it's the second
on Armored Core 4, right?
Yeah, well, there's actually an Armored Core 4, and there's Armored Core 4, the number.
Is
answer.
It four question?
which I guess is just built on the Armored Core 4 engine. This might be one of the most frustrating games I've ever played. And it doesn't make any sense to me because this is the kind of game I should be good at.
So, are you a fan of the Armored Core franchise? Like,
this is my first foray into it.
It just seems like a really weird choice, James. I'll be honest with you. I mean, of all
really?
like, so you got this.
It's
for
really niche.
Yeah.
Really niche.
I don't know. Like,
have we not established that I have a niche game selection?
I mean, I just think of this is for 360, right?
Yeah.
I just think of all the games that you could have bought for 360 instead of that.
Well, first off, I need to point out that my selection was somewhat limited because I was buying with a Best Buy gift card, and Best Buy's gaming selection historically sucks ass.
Okay.
It is monumentally terrible.
But I don't think Armored Core is the best you could do.
Yeah, don't apologize for it, James. Don't bully you and say, oh, why aren't you buying some sort of AAA title? Yeah. You're entitled to buy what you want.
I think that it's not something that needs to be apologized for. I think, you know, as a game concept, it's the kind of game that I would enjoy. I mean, I played, you know, every MechWarrior game that ever came out. I used to be pretty good at it online. I used to be, you know, a fairly competitive player when I was younger in MechWarrior 4 online. This game is just fucking obnoxious, though, because the entire concept is usually, all right, here's your unit. Go out and crush this army. And by the seventh mission, mission 7, they've decided that, you know, you're good enough to take down a giant city-sized robot killing machine. You aren't.
I played Armored Core 2, I think, for the first PlayStation, or maybe it was like a really early PS2 game, and I liked it. I liked making my own mech, but I thought the missions, like the difficulty, was all over the place, and sometimes they would just throw you into something that was way beyond your level. It hasn't changed.
So there's this giant walking battle station called the Spirit of Motherwind that you have to shoot all of its missile launchers off its decks, which, by the way, are homing missiles, and if you get hit by all of them because they fire in a barrage, you die. Unquestionable, you die. You have to shoot out its giant long-range cannons, which, if they hit you, you are in a lot of pain. So I actually managed... Oh, and you have to close at it from long distance while it's firing at you. It's great. I actually got under it and started shooting stuff out, and this was right before we started the podcast. This is like my 12th attempt at blowing this goddamn thing up, and it stepped on me and killed me. I walked up here and sat down here and huffed in a bad mood because of that.
Have you this week or ever played a video game that made you happy?
No, yes.
Of course not. Yes. It's not Ace Combat.
Ace Combat. Yes, obviously.
Anything this week?
This week? Nothing new this week that I've played that I've really, really enjoyed. You know, I went back and I've been pulling out 360 games that I played, you know, on a regular TV just to see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, I think that I can say that for the Wii games I've put on there, the difference isn't really that much. You know, I went from having just standard RCA connection to having, you know, component. And there is some difference, but it's not major. Whereas
that's mainly a color difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, color difference.
And there's some sharp, a little bit of sharpness.
And progressive scan, I assume.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's nice.
For the 360 games, huge difference. Unbelievable. And, you know, some of the games got easier because I can actually see what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, well, I think the text issues should demonstrate they are very much designing those games with HD in mind.
Right. I mean, the text was a huge issue, but, you know, in the case of, to bring up the game that I'm apparently not allowed to talk about anymore, I could actually see see action going on further away with more clarity and could react to it before I was in the middle of it.
Okay. Well, Greg, you're next.
Luigi's Mansion, that's taken up a fair bit of my gaming time, we'll get to that. Plucked from obscurity of the Japanese Virtual Console this week is a little thing called Dai Makaimura, better known as Ghouls and Ghosts. This is the Super Graphics version. It's a very obscure upgrade to the PC Engine or TurboGrafx that only ever had 5 games made for it, I think. And this is one of them. And I've seen comparison stuff. It's a slightly better version of the arcade Ghouls and Ghosts. Super Ghouls and Ghosts was, in fact, a completely different game. It wasn't just, like, enhanced. It was like a sequel. Obviously, it's got a lot of in common. So this is a different game, and there are some differences in the gameplay. The double jump isn't there, which really...
I
couldn't accept that at all. I kept wanting to double jump all the time. It just took me the longest.
I'm gonna do it this time. Oh fuck!
No, but to kind of counter that a bit, you can actually shoot up, You can throw your lance or whatever up and down if you're in the air. So that kind of gives you, obviously in Super Ghouls, you'd kind of have to double jump up high to take out things, whereas in this, you can kind of get under them and throw. So it kind of balances out a bit. I still kind of miss the double jump. It's pretty damn hard, you will be unsurprised to hear. It may be slightly harder than Super Ghouls and Ghosts, actually.
Really?
It may be. Beautiful. It's tough to tell because I played Super Ghouls and Ghosts originally when I was quite young.
Yeah.
And I know it like the back of my hand now. So it's very difficult to do a side-by-side comparison and kind of judge which is the more difficult. But this is really tough stuff. But I guess the best thing about this conversion rather than the Genesis one, which is, of course, on the American and European virtual consoles, is the animation is very much more fluid. Which I think it adds quite a lot to, especially with the bosses.
This is probably the closest to the CPS-1 version of it, which was the arcade machine that Capcom released their games on at that time.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it was converted an awful lot of times, included, I don't know whether you've ever heard of the X68000 computer in Japan that had that Castlevania game that came out later as Castlevania
Chronicles.
Yeah, it
was made by Sharp. The X68000.
Yeah. That apparently had a quote-unquote pixel-perfect conversion of Ghouls and Ghosts. But this is not that, I can tell you that from
there was
from
even
the
a conversion for the ZX Sinclair Spectrum.
Yeah, like, all these like terrible...
Excuse me, the ZX Spectrum. Excuse me.
Yeah, but I haven't seen any screenshots or anything of that, but I can pretty much assure you that that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, because...
but this is kind of very much like the Genesis, but slightly better, so it's a little closer to the arcades. It's just better animation, some extra detail. I think the sound's still pretty weak. I don't know whether they just didn't really, it doesn't sound appreciably better than other Turbo graphics games, so I don't know whether that just got kind of ignored with the upgrade to the Super Graphics. But
Super Graphics was only a graphical upgrade, and the games were still on cartridge.
And some of the games that actually, I think some of these Super Graphics games were games that would actually play on the TG-16, but they were just
they were dual mode, kind of like black Game Boy Color cartridges.
I think one of them was one of the Darius games and stuff like that. You know, but it was so obscure. But it's nice that they put this on there because from the comparisons, it is definitely better than the Genesis version. And it's still only 600 points on the Japanese Virtual Console, so that's good. They didn't add a sort of Super Graphics premium the way they add a CD premium. But obviously, it's still Ghouls and Ghosts. It's still really hard. You still die a lot. I like it. The level designs are pretty imaginative. I've got to the end of the fourth level. There's only five, so I've seen a lot of the game there. But I presume I will get the pleasure of going through it again, as you do with the Makaimura series.
You know, every game I play in that franchise or in related to that franchise, I fully expect it to F me over at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd be a mug not to expect it at this point.
Okay, Greg, anything else from you?
No, that about covers it for me, I think.
All right, Neil, it's your time to shine, man.
All right, I'll start off what I've actually been playing besides New York Comic Con. I picked up Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection for Xbox 360, which is like $30 with like 49-something like Genesis arcade games. I haven't played that much of it. I got it yesterday, but it's pretty good. I played some Altered Beast. I played... E-SWAT, which I never played before, which was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I played Decap Attack, which I never played before, but was kind of a fun
Decap
little platformer. Which, I'm trying to think of remember the guy's name in it. It's some terrible pun.
Who would have thought?
In what? Decap Attack?
Yeah.
It's like, it's Chuck D. Head, I think.
Yeah, Chuck D. Head. That is it.
Because the gameplay mechanic is he throws his skull at the enemy, right?
Yeah. Well, you pick up a skull. Other than that, like, there's some weird thing that comes out of your chest and attacks the enemies.
Chuck D. Head.
It's a really weird game, but I've been enjoying that a lot. And just the fact that there's so much on that.
Yeah, it's pretty good value. Is there anything in particular you wanted it for, or is it just the sheer
breadth machine?
I had a Genesis when I was a kid, and this is just a good way to have everything on one disc, as opposed to being tricked into buying Kid Chameleon for $8 on Virtual Console.
Yeah, there's a much better value proposition than that.
Now I have it on another disc.
I think that this is a good time for people who didn't have Sega systems to go back and review what Sega had to offer then, and then realize they made the right decision. Because there are some really terrible games on here.
Oh, yeah.
Vector Man 2.
Yeah, there are. Bonanza Brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Or Final... Isn't, like, Phantasy Star, like, up to 4 on there?
Yeah, they have 1 through 4 on
those. Those are all good. I mean, 3 is considered the worst, but...
4 is kind of...
There's 2 Shining Force games on it, too.
Shining Force, wow. I will accept. Actually, there's...
I'm not saying it's bad.
Actually, there's 3.
So, a lot of RPG love. That's
yeah,
cool.
There's, yeah. like, yeah. all 4 Golden Axes are on there. I mean, it's...
4? Yeah.
Did we really need 4 fucking Golden Axes? Really?
But they're all the same, yeah, really. That and Streets of Rage.
Gain Ground is on there, which, by the way, looks worse than an NES game.
Yeah, I didn't realize how bad that game
looked. I think it kind of
illustrates
how thin Sega stretched itself during this time to try and actually, you know, generate a software lineup in terms of it did so much stuff in terms of developing its own games,
yeah.
doing ports of other people's games, of publishing, you know, other people's games, like what they did with Treasure Den. I mean, they were so busy trying to populate the Genesis with a software lineup. But of course, it never really paid off in Japan because the Genesis, the Mega Drive was never big there.
Yeah.
But mainly due to the efforts of like sports titles and things that it caught on in the West.
It seems like Sega was batting
0.
At
batting
best
zero.
500 back in the Genesis era, but
well,
I do admire them for taking the time to put out a collection like this that is such a good value, obviously. If you have any
fabulous.
Nostalgia for these games or any interest in retro games, it seems like a great purchase, and I just think like Nintendo would never do that. Never.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they
yeah.
can get so
yeah.
much money on Virtual Console for it all.
Did we really need Streets of Rage 3?
All 3 of them.
Is that the one with the kangaroo? The third one.
Yeah, that's
yes.
the one with the kangaroo.
Oh,
and the old man with like a cone head and a flaming arm.
Yeah.
He's got a stone arm that's on fucking fire, and they've got a streetwalker.
Wow, I kind of want to play this now.
Yeah, seriously, it sounds good.
Suddenly, this game has hit. Oh, and they've got on the cover. I'm looking at the cover art right now. Streets of Rage 3. The macho looking guy looks like Patrick Swayze after somewhere in the 80s after he just finished taping Roadhouse, and he's just had breast implants.
Dalton.
The pecs look
so somewhere between Roadhouse and Dirty Dancing.
Yes. See, I think I honestly think that Altered Beast should not be on there for account of being ridiculous.
I love Altered Beast,
but it's so funny. I don't think I've played past
no
the second
one's
level
played
because
past
it's not
the
that
level.
Fun. But
yeah,
it's so
I thought
funny.
That game was amazing.
I have. I got to the bear.
I thought that game was amazing back in the day, but it is absolute crap. It really is.
It's such ass.
Well, the Genesis version is especially bad.
Yeah.
The arcade version.
The arcade
is pretty
one.
Good.
I didn't realize the arcade one looks pretty good.
Yeah. The arcade one is much better. Because
that's also on.
That would be the one to play then. Okay, well, Neil, I think we need to get on with the New York Comic Con. I know you've got a lot to say about it, and you play a lot of
all
games.
Right.
So.
Well, I'll start off with what I thought was the game of the show, which is Mad World, which is every bit as violent and bloody as you would expect, and also every bit as fun as you might expect. The blood would be so ridiculous and out of place if it wasn't black and white, but it looks so perfect with it being black and white, and just like every kill is so much fun. You can use everything around you. Like, I electrocuted people, I shoved people through spikes. There's like finishing moves where you rip people in half, or there's even really, really repetitive or like not necessary finishing moves where like you'll cut someone's legs off and then stomp on their head, but the stomp on the head is a separate move and the guy's already dead, he's not getting up, he doesn't have any legs. But
this is what you think.
Do these guys ever present any challenge to you, or are they just there for you to mutilate?
At least in the level that I played, there wasn't much of a challenge, and that's kind of my worry about the game, is that if it doesn't go past that, if it's just, you know, beating the crap out of people, that'll be fun for a couple of levels, but I don't think that'll hold up over a longer game. But they have bloodbath challenges, is what they're called. That's like the man darts. And in the demo that I played, they had, it's called Death Press, where you would throw people into this, like, this pool where a giant spiked platform would fall down and kill them, making it like the pool filled with blood. And you'd have like 2 minutes to do this. But I mean, it's a lot of fun, but I feel like there has to be more to it.
Yeah, that's my fear, because there's been a few games like this where it's just basically just, it's going to make this really, really bloody. And that'll be good enough. And
Yeah.
Anytime a game,
we don't actually have to design a game.
Anytime a game like that comes out, I hope for it to fail. I mean, I legitimately hope the game to fail because I don't want to see that become a selling point in the industry. Because not only does it make people who play games look bad, and it really does. If let's say Manhunt 2 sold millions of copies, think of the media coverage that would have gotten, and think of the firestorm it would have created.
Okay, Jack Thompson.
No, I'm actually afraid of people like Jack Thompson getting something to talk about.
I don't know. I think that's overblown, man. I mean, there's games in every single. I mean, every single genre. There's always, you know, something. There's always one game like that. I mean, somebody always tries to push the envelope. I mean, it, you know, if it's, you know, in, you see that in film and TV. Somebody always pushes the envelope. It doesn't mean that you like, you know, condemn the. I mean, maybe it's just because gaming is kind of new compared to, like, you know, TV and movies.
I think those hyper-violent movies do get some condemnation too. But my point isn't that. There is that they're not out there. It's that I don't want to see them become, you know, more mainstream than these games like Manhunt 2 already are.
Well, you know, this is an interesting line of discussion, but I'd prefer to save it for when Mad World's actually out and we all have a chance to play it, because I think that kind of thing's going to come back up again for sure. So maybe we should talk about a different game.
All right. Well, I'll stick with Sega. The Conduit was also there, and it actually gives me this kind of Time Splitters Metroid Prime vibe, because it has some exploration with the all-seeing eye, which is, like, used for puzzles. Didn't really see that much in the demo. But
so
the controls
didn't see much with the all-seeing eye?
No, I did not. But the controls are pretty similar to, like, Metroid Prime Hunt or Metroid Prime Corruption. It controls really well, and the more I played it over the 3 days I was at Comic-Con, the more I liked it, and hopefully the multiplayer will be good. There won't be any split-screen multiplayer, which kind of sucks. But...
Yeah, I agree with you on this, Neil. I think that's very sad, because it's like what Johnny's talked about with Mario Kart Wii, or you could apply it to Mario Strikers, is that, you know, the fun of actually being able to play online, but with
exactly.
someone in the room
right.
with you, you know, combining both,
yeah.
and sort of
yeah.
the two of you sort of taking on other people as a team or something like that, and I've played 360 games like that with friends, or even original Xbox, like Time Splitters 3, Perfect Dark, things like that, you know, and that is a lot of fun doing that, and it's very much a shame that that won't be a part of the Conduit. I very much agree with that.
Yeah, I concur.
Now on that note, the one good news is that Crytek purchased Free Radical, so we may very well see Time Splitters again.
We can only hope. Although they're now Crytek UK.
Yeah, true.
Free Radical is dead.
Yeah, and Crytek's not likely to do anything on the Wii, to be honest.
I don't know, man.
No,
because Crytek is like
I know
super
what they are,
graphic horse.
But I mean. I know, but I mean...
But maybe Free Radical is their new Wii studio.
John, they make games for computers that only exist in theory.
Crytek does.
I know.
Yeah, they might be diversifying their...
Yeah.
Look, I worry that we'll end up... If they diversify, they're going to end up with high-def party games.
Well, let me ask you this. Why would they buy a company only to make games that compete with theirs?
Not to compete with, but to fill the gap between their game.
I think the point is that it's not as out of bounds as you make it sound.
Well, and I'm not saying it's completely out of bounds.
But what does this have to do with the Conduit?
Because John...
Not very much.
Split-screen multiplayer.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, no, I did have a question about the Conduit, though. So, how did it play?
So, James, what do you mean by how it plays?
Well, I mean... Not just from, you know, the mechanics of the play controls and things, because I know those are completely up to you, or at least we're told.
Yeah, even the HUD is customizable, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I've heard that you pretty much do anything you want to it. But just from a sheer, like, because for whatever reason, when I look at the game, I see a game that technically seems very sound, but just is lacking in soul.
I mean, the story just seems to be like the typical, like, aliens invade. I think there's some kind of, like, twist in it.
It all seems very soulless and generic. I mean, if that makes sense.
I'm kind of the question is,
does that extend to the play design?
Yes, and the actual execution of gameplay.
I don't really think the game design is going to be hurt by the kind of genericness of the story. And I think
it's not just the genericness of the story. It's when I look at images of the game, I'm like, yeah, I've done that before.
No, but, you know, to my mind, the concern would be, you know, are the objectives very sort of uniform, unimaginative, kind of just, you know, kill rooms, things like, you know, is it really just like basic stuff like that, or does it feel a bit more organic and interesting?
I mean, at least from the level that I played, which I think is like the seventh level in it or something, I mean, it is very much, you know, you're going to this area, you're killing things, but there's a few puzzle elements, like with the all-seeing eye, like there was something where I had to like look for hieroglyphics with it, and then I opened up a room where there's a lot of guns. Like, they have some kind of crude cover system in it. It does seem... like, you're right in that it does seem kind of generic, but I guess because there's never been anything like it that's been that good on the Wii, that, personally, I don't really think there's anything that wrong with it, and I hope that the game has more personality than what was shown at the Comic-Con and the levels that they showed.
So there is a certain lack of personality that you observe while playing the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean,
did you get to see any of the story, really, or anything like that?
The only story that I saw, I know, because I had an interesting run-in with the voice actor, Mark Shepard, who voices the main character, and I actually found out that the voiceover stuff that they had in there was not him, it was just a fill-in. And I know they have a pretty nice voice cast for it. They got, they got him, they have his dad, they've been in a lot of sci-fi crap, and, Battlestar Galactica, Firefly... And Kevin Sorbo is, voicing, some terrorist guy, which was bound to be fun.
Epic win.
Yeah.
Kevin Sorbo.
But
my career is over.
I really hope that the story is actually interesting, and I think that's going to hinge on a lot of that genericness. Is it going to be there or is it not? If the story is actually going to be fun, then I think that could triumph over it.
For me, the concern is the play design, because I'm not a big shooter guy, and I strongly doubt the story is going to engage me, however competent or not.
Right.
I don't think it's just going to be like the standard, like, just kill all the enemies there. It does seem like they are going to, you know, have some puzzle elements in it. It's not going to be just
a straight
shooter.
That's definitely something positive.
When I say that it feels like it lacks soul, a certain amount of that does come down to, you know, is it really just, you know, repaving the old shooter standbys? You know, some limited puzzle action, but mostly just room full of enemies, kill them all.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I feel like people are extra hard on first-person shooters nowadays just because they've been done so much.
But I think that's fair, though, because I think...
That always happens.
Yeah, but not on the Wii.
But it's not like when they went to the Wii, they forgot everything about shooters and shooter game design. I still think you do need to try to push something new on the gaming community.
It doesn't have to be all about pushing either. It's just about making something interesting, you know.
Right.
I mean,
but I think it's fair to judge games that, you know, there's a lot of entries in that franchise, even if it's not on that system, you know, against the other games. If there's a lot of games there, it's going to be harder to be judged against those games because there is such a quantity of things to compare them to.
Mm-hmm. It always happens with the sort of predominant genres of the day, you know, scrolling shooters.
Yeah.
You know, after a while, it was got harder and harder to get really outstanding scores, you know, on the 16-bit systems because people said, we've been here and done that, you know, do we really care anymore?
Right.
And you know, it got one-on-one fighting games very much got that way once there was an overabundance of those. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the FPSs are very much the predominant genre of today, so you really shouldn't expect it to be held to a different standard than they were.
Well, I just feel like, people are extremely hard on first-person shooters. Like, sometimes I just feel like saying, like, what do you expect? It's a first-person shooter. Like, do you want, like, a treatise on art history? Is that what you're looking for? To set this, like, above and beyond every first-person shooter out there? I mean...
Well, it's true.
I mean,
did you feel excited when you played the game?
I mean, I definitely... Well, going into it, I was kind of skeptical of it, especially because I heard all the things about no split-screen multiplayer, and that was the main reason why I was excited for it. And I guess the best thing I can say about the game is that after I played the demo, I am definitely going to get this game now. It was enough fun. The controls were really nice. The fact that they're all customizable is great. Mm-hmm. The online, even though I'm not that big much of an online player, like I'll probably try the online in this, and maybe I'll actually play it more than I played Halo 3 online or anything else like that.
The online is very important to me because I have pretty low expectations for the single player.
Mm-hmm.
Because of everything we've talked about, it seems a little soulless. I think the art design kind of undercuts the fact that the technical side is so good because the art doesn't look very good to me. I haven't seen anything that makes me really interested. And typically, I don't really like first-person shooters that much, so it takes a lot to pull me in. But I do like online multiplayer shooters, if they're done well, if they're well balanced and the controls are good and the online matching is good, and because this thing, you know, they seem to be pretty serious about the online mode, they're supporting WeSpeak, I think that stuff is all in the right direction. When I find out more about the multiplayer, then I'm going to be pretty interested. And by the way, I looked it up. Mark Shepard, if anyone is a fan of Battlestar Galactica like I am, he plays Romo Lampkin.
He was Romo.
Romo Lampkin, named after Tony Romo, actually.
Seriously?
If you look on YouTube for an interview with Mark Shepard or an interview, it's someone filming me talking to him while my friend was playing the game, which is kind of creepy because it's just some crappy camera.
Yeah.
I stumbled upon it and
quite sneaky. Actually,
I have to leave some angry YouTube comments on that just because it's like I did the interview. Don't take credit for my shit.
The voyeur interview series. That, Frost Nixon.
Neil, I know you played quite a bit of House of the Dead Overkill. That game is basically out next week, I think, or.
It's actually out now.
Yeah, by the time people hear this, it'll be out.
Yeah.
So I guess rather than an extended treatise on it, what I'm interested in is, do you think it's worth buying? I mean, did you get a sense of how much content there is, or did you talk to anybody about that?
I did, and one of the PR guys, like, they recently got a copy of the game, and I think it's 7 levels. There's a regular mode and then a director's cut mode, where it's the exact same level, is a little harder, I think, and they have like extra scenes in it.
Yeah.
And like the dialogue of the game, I don't know if anyone's seen any reviews about it or anything, but it's ridiculously over the top. I think they had the first level of the game, and I'm probably going to pick it up as soon as I can.
Like, intentionally over the top though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a total pastiche.
Like it's definitely very much like Grindhouse. Like, they have a scene where someone gets their glasses knocked off. And then the next scene, the guy has the glasses on. Just a lot of nice touches like that. Like, it definitely, it's very, very funny. And, I mean, I've never actually bought a House of the Dead game. I played them in arcades, and I think I'm definitely going to get this game.
Yeah, I guess the most promising thing about the director's cut kind of thing is it does sound a little bit like the kind of, like, Sin and Punishment's hard mode. Because that had extra bosses and extra things in it, and it's kind of an interesting way of expanding the replay value, kind of like making it a little more difficult, but actually giving you new content as well. But I mean, it's still only a few hours long, isn't it? Ultimately, so I mean,
I think there's enough replay value if you enjoy the game. The levels, you know, I don't really think they get stale that quickly.
Yeah, I think if you're into the vibe, if you're into the charm, then that will kind of lubricate things as far as replaying it, and then it will probably be more worthwhile.
And my problem with replaying games like this is, I mean, I definitely respect replay value, but this is a light gun game. You're on rails. You don't control the movement. Can you even control, like, looking around like you can in Umbrella
You can control
Chronicles?
Looking around. I think it's like...
It's minor.
Yeah, I haven't played Umbrella Chronicles, but it might be similar to that. I know it's left or right.
There is multiplayer too, right?
Yeah, see, I think there's co-op, and I think there's some minigames.
Yeah, see, I think that turns it more into a party game than a shooter, because, you know, I used to go dump dollars into those arcade on-rail shooters, because I'd be playing it with a friend of mine on those big TVs they used to set up in arcades. And you know, that was amusing because, you know, you could just F with them, you know, you could kick their foot off the duck pedal, cause them to get shot. You know,
it's a bit meta, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
All right, Neil, Beyond Sega, what did
all
you
right,
say?
All right, Beyond Sega, I got, if anyone checked the site, I wrote a really, really long preview on Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars, which... looks to me, it's pretty much the entirety of Grand Theft Auto 4, at least as far as the city, with the exception of, like, the Jersey part.
That's not necessarily a good thing, in my opinion. But the city's way too big.
Yeah, but they have, like, you can quickly get around it there. Everything's fully modeled in 3D. It looks very, very impressive. I was first kind of put off by the way the graphics looked. Like, at first, I just kind of glanced at it. It's, like, the first booth when you walked in, so I picked it up for a couple minutes, and I didn't like it at all. And then as I went back later in the con to play it more, and then I had, like, a press thing with it. I mean, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, and I've never really gotten that much into a Grand Theft Auto game, but this looks like the kind of one that I would get into, because it seems to have a lot of that pick-up-and-play feel to it, and that works really well for the DS. And they have, like, cool little touchscreen things, like you'll use gas containers to fill up Molotov cocktails, or go to a gas station and fill up Molotov cocktails. You'll assemble a sniper rifle using the touchscreen.
What about the main gameplay, though? I mean, is it fun to play? Does it feel like GTA?
It does feel like GTA.
Does it feel more like GTA pre-3 or post-3?
I think it, I mean, it definitely doesn't really feel like GTA 4, because even though, I mean, it still has, you know, the overarching story and everything, it seems to be a lot more lighthearted, which, I mean, whenever, I didn't play that much of GTA 4, but from what I played of it, like, the story took itself too seriously, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
But, yeah. But I think Chinatown Wars is going to be a lot more tongue-in-cheek. It's not going to have, you know, the damn phone ringing every 5 minutes being like, oh, come pick me up.
Yeah, let's go bowling. No, I don't want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, like, I don't want to go bowling. I don't want to go on a date with some girl.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty
in a video game. But
your mandates? I mean,
I'm trying to kill this guy. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
It's time for a mandate, Johnny.
But they have cool stuff in it. Like, you can replay all the missions. There's stat tracking for everything. There's this whole this drug dealing thing, which seems kind of weird at first, but they have this whole kind of like side quest in it of dealing drugs throughout the entire world of GTA, you know, all of Liberty City. You have, you know, 6 different levels. You know, you got like heroin, coke, marijuana.
Here comes Rodest.
But it definitely, I mean, game looks good. I'm excited for it. Hopefully we might get a copy earlier. I don't know, maybe.
It's always nice.
Yeah.
So, Neil, we're running a little long on this segment. Can you pick one other game that you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
All right. I'm just going to mention Overlord Wii looks like an evil Pikmin, which seems kind of fun. Ghostbusters for Wii, very cartoony, a lot of fun. I played both that and the 360 PS3 version. I like the Wii version a lot more. I think the motion controls work really well for it. And Bit Trip Beat, which is Axis Games' WiiWare title that I think should be coming out in the next month or two, which, as maybe, I was telling Johnny earlier, is pretty much Communist Pong with a mixture of Rez in it, which is really, really cool.
Communist Pong.
As in, like, you have, you know, one paddle, you can have up to 4 players play at the same time, and you have, you know, all the paddles are on one side of the screen, and then you'll have the different balls flying in, and they go to a rhythm of a song. And, like, the balls have different, like, physics and motions to it. And if you miss them, then the song doesn't go on, and then you end up going into, like, this black and white purgatory. And I don't know if you can really fail. It's really weird, but I'm probably going to pick it up when it comes out. It looks really, really fun. Reminds me a lot of Maboshi's Arcade in that kind of very difficult but relaxing way.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up our new business, and we are going to take a break and be back with Listener Mail and Luigi's Mansion.
Hey there, Radio Free Nintendo listeners. I'm Carl Castaneda, your host from a long, long, long time ago. And I was talking to Greg and Johnny about putting up a little spot for my new show, Talk 112. That's TAWK-112. You can find it over on iTunes, and it comes out every Tuesday. So what do we talk about on Talk 112? Well, there's movies, music, TV, pop culture, that kind of thing. Really, we're going to go for the biting social commentary. Stuff like...
She's like, we're sitting there, like, looking up, and she's like, you got a condom? I'm like, yep!
And, of course...
I want to hear it. Oh, God!
Flash!
Classic moments, indeed. Remember, that's TAWK-112, Talk 112, at iTunes. Back to the show.
Okay, we're back for Listener Mail, and John has the first letter.
Hold on.
every week. All right. Every fucking week.
All right, Sophia, every week. Sophia writes, thanks to
John Lindemann, director of NintendoWorldReport.com.
So all publishers and press contacts, do not send email to him because he won't.
Don't listen, I'm a consummate professional. Anyways, Sophia writes, thanks to Dynamite Hetty, I am once again in love with Treasure's brilliant boss designs. So my question is, what other games come to mind when it comes to creative and engaging boss battles? Or perhaps a boss that you thought was very well done? Not necessarily hard, as in difficult, though it could be that, but just fun to battle.
Treasure games immediately come to mind.
Right, and I think she wants to go beyond that.
I also liked Smithy from Super Mario RPG is one of the most epic bosses.
That
I've
is
ever
a
seen.
Great battle.
That goes on a while.
Definitely goes on far too long.
I think some rare boss battles might meet this criteria on the N64 era.
What about like the Jet Force Gemini Impossible boss?
That boss is not impossible. God, I think King K. Rool in Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah, that's a great boss.
Yeah, but, that is a great boss.
Yeah.
My generally like bosses that are pretty dynamic actually have like maybe different forms or they shift their attack patterns. And one of my favorite ever is the final boss to Contra 3, which has three forms. You fight the alien head that has these like two tentacle things that to start, and then when you kill that shell, you fight the brain with the crazy roulette of death rotating around it. And then when you kill the brain, you think, well, it's definitely dead now, except then it sort of gets a new shell and starts climbing up the wall to come and get you, and then you're gonna kill that. I mean, it's just insane, great. Three different, totally different attack patterns, totally different kind of boss battle wrapped into one, stuff like that. And Treasure's very good about that kind of thing, like, having the attacks, like, completely changed. Because I don't like it where boss battles become a war of attrition. Can happen. I think some of the later bosses in Metroid Prime 3, and probably some of them in 2 as well, I could get into that category where it's like, I figured out how to beat it, now I've just got to spend all this time, dodging the same attacks over and over to get the same amount of health off the boss, rinse and repeat for however long it takes, too long,
I think the final boss in, Wario Land Shake It,
That's a really fun boss.
It's a fun boss, but it's not really.
It could have stood to be trimmed a bit, I think.
Yeah, it could have.
I'd agree. Yeah.
What is it?
Because it does change, but it changes pretty slowly. Like it kind of does the same thing a number of times.
The change is pretty insubstantial. It's just you have to hit him more times.
Well, I think Zelda has some good bosses, but I think as the series has gone on, they've become too simple.
Boss.
There's some trick, there's some weak point, you hit that 3 times and the boss is done.
One of my favorite boss battles actually from a recent Zelda game was one that was completely easy, but it was just visually kind of interesting and funny. It was the Zant boss battle. Where he sort of appears in all the different sections, and it's just funny. Like, he's giant, but then you hit him and he shrinks down to really small, and he just goes completely insane. So I was going, it was easy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't clever in terms of like how you beat him, but it was just fun, and like it wasn't just doing the same thing 3 times. It was kind of like all these different takes on previous boss battles and stuff. It was sometimes a boss battle can be just fun in that way. It's just visually kind of fun.
Right. I think Majora's Mask does that too, though. Majora's Mask has quite a few good boss battles, and the final one is amusing. It's not the best in the game, but
it's kind of similar to the Zant, but less effective in terms of, again, it's kind of just going in these different
unless
forms.
You're the legendary hero Link, at which point it's entirely ineffectual. But
it isn't gonna last very
there's
long.
The boss battle where you can turn into a giant for limited times. There's the one where you roll around in the wheel mode as the Goron.
Yeah.
I think and I'm gonna brutalize the pronunciation here, but what was the wizard's name in Link to the Past? Was it Aghanim?
Aghanim.
I thought that was a great boss battle, especially considering it's basically in the middle of the game. I think it's probably the most interesting.
That was the introduction of the deadly tennis to Zelda, which is
exactly of reflecting his shots. And the game doesn't really tell you exactly what to do. They give a lot of great hints about, the Master Sword repels evil. You figure that's all just a bunch of story crap. You don't think that'll actually tie into a boss battle, and it does. And when you finally realize that's what you have to do, it's such a really cool mechanic, and they've milked it pretty well ever since then in a lot of Zelda games. I think even in Legend of Princess, you end up having to do that. But you do. It's great. But I also think the first Metroid Prime has some excellent boss battles. And
I feel like Ridley in that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost all the Metroid games have good boss battles. And even Ridley, who is in almost every single one of them, you tend to fight him in very different ways in each one.
Yeah, and I always feel like in those games, the bosses are hard, But just as you feel you're about to get wiped out and don't have a chance, you just happen to beat the boss. So yep. You never feel like you're really out of it.
There was one in Super Metroid that had a sort of amusing thing. Was it, I think it was the Dragoon or something, where you could actually kill it a sort of different way. In that,
you
if you tried to, if you grappled out, or tried to grapple out, it would actually electrocute and take a lot of its health away that way. That was kind of fun.
I was like the Mother Brain in Super Metroid. That's definitely one of my favorite. Just to go back and replay.
Well, I suppose the second form of Mother Brain in Super Metroid would be another case of the boss battle. It's a pretty easy boss battle, but it's actually just the way it plays out that's fun, and with the whole sort of drama of it. Yeah.
Well, I think Chrono Trigger does a great job of RPG boss battles.
Yeah.
There's some really interesting ones, and none of them are tactically really complicated, but they sometimes ask you to do things that you wouldn't expect in an RPG, or that really change up the style of the rest of the bosses. There's I would definitely include Lavos, especially considering as a final boss, there's so many different ways that you end up being able to fight him depending on the choices that you take.
How many different times you can fight him?
Right. He has several different forms, and the final one, well, I kind of don't want to spoil this because some people are probably still playing through it, but there's a really surprising element of the very final form of Lavos Core that I will never forget because it plays against your expectations so much. But,
I think... I had to think about it for a minute.
Okay, if you've played it, you probably know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
but it's been like 10 years. I'm like, what's he talking about?
Yeah, there's a lot of bosses in Chrono Trigger where it really helps if you move the cursor around and maybe end up attacking a part of the boss that doesn't look very important.
Yep.
That it's not obvious that you would even be able to attack that point on the boss.
That's how it worked with the ladies.
Well done, sir. Okay.
Men of leisure.
That's a good question, Sophia.
We're men of leisure.
Okay, the next question is from Rube Gumbo from LA. And he writes, "Hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to say that I've been a fan of your show for a few shows now, and I must say that I'm very pleased. I was wondering if you guys were disappointed in the DS games released this quarter." I'm not sure if he means Q4 of 2008 or
Q1. The ones that are projected, because Nintendo published their list, so we know everything that's coming out this quarter.
Right. He says, "I mean, there's this onslaught of games that quite frankly suck balls. The good games will come, but now I only see Phantasy Star Online." So I'm not sure what all games he's referring to there, other than Personal Trainer Math.
It's probably just the torrent of shovelware and this that the stuff that isn't on Nintendo's list, but is on the release list every week.
There's still quite a few good games coming out this quarter.
We got
Fire Emblem, Dragon Quest V, Retro Game Challenge came out this week.
I'm waiting for my Amazon order to get here.
No, but that's the thing, though. I mean, with DS, there might be so many other titles that are kind of overwhelming numbers, but at the end of the day, it doesn't take a very big percentage of the titles to be great to have a lot of great games, because...
Right.
I mean, Nintendo, isn't doing a whole lot, I suppose. I mean, Shadow Dragon's already out everywhere else, so maybe some people don't really see that as, like, a great release. Because it's like, well, shouldn't we have had this sooner, maybe, in North America?
But GTA Chinatown comes out in March, right?
Yeah, and that comes out, that's March as well.
So that's the first
quarter. But, I mean, from doing, like, the weekly release article since the beginning of January, there's definitely a lot of crap coming out for DS every week, but there's also a lot of good games that are coming out still. Mm-hmm. I mean, not necessarily from Nintendo. They got Fire Emblem and Personal Trainer Math this quarter, but still, there's good games coming out.
Yeah, I think Personal Trainer Walking might be coming out in March, which,
walking?
As lame as
walking?
It sounds, if
one
you, I know.
One foot know, in front of other.
I know, as lame as it sounds, if you read up on it, it actually sounds pretty cool.
It's all about the pedometer,
It comes with two pedometers, so it's like WeFit, it tracks how much you've walked every day, because it syncs up with the pedometer. And it also has, it does like workout schedules and things. It actually acts like a personal trainer. And then it also has a really cool thing where the game connects with your Wii, and you can import your Mii from the Wii to the DS.
So your Mii created on
the Mii channel on your Wii now appears on your DS, and that's your avatar for playing the game. That's pretty cool, okay? Yeah. It's
and
that's
it's gonna be
way more
too,
effort
right?
than was put into personal trainer math, okay? So don't dismiss that one offhand. So I guess our response to Rube Gumbo is that there are good games coming out. There are a lot of crappy games, but there are also a lot of good games coming out. The trick with DS is always, because of the sheer volume of software, you really have to kind of know what's good and what's not. And hopefully our website can help you with that. But man, Dragon Quest V comes out
every week.
Dragon Quest V coming out so soon. I'm not even ready for Dragon Quest V.
Yeah, that just blows my mind. And then what?
I'm so excited for it, though.
Is there another one?
And Retro Game Challenge, I'm
Is there
really
another one between 5 and 10?
Is
the
there
6
another
is
going
to be ported as well.
Six is coming to DS.
Yeah. 6 will probably come out here before 9.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
But I'm hoping for Dragon Quest 9 this fall.
Is 6 out in Japan yet, or has it been announced for Japan? 6?
I don't know. I know 5 has been out for a while in Japan, so yeah. I would assume that 6 is coming soon. But maybe they're going to delay it till after 9.
Square is like...
No, they'd have to delay that really quite far because they just delayed 9 to July.
Did they really?
Yeah, 9's way back there now.
So when's it coming out here?
Apparently
it
could actually affect 13, Final Fantasy 13, excuse me. could actually...
Yeah, because they wouldn't want to release those two against each other.
But they would both be in the second half of the same year at this point, which is a little close for comfort.
Yeah. Well, Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Echoes of Time, which is on DS and Wii, I think that's coming out in either March or April.
I think it's the end of March.
Okay, so that's coming out pretty soon, too. That may you may be interested
in the U.S.
is
coming out the end of March?
Yeah, I think so.
That's already out.
It's already out in Japan.
I think it's quarter one in Europe, even, possibly.
That's crazy, because, I mean, that game really did just come out of nowhere.
Yeah. It did, but it doesn't look like it it was a massive production either.
No, but still, that's very unsquare. But
I am curious about that game for sure.
It might be fun.
Okay, well, I think we should move on to the next one, which would be from James.
So Greg from Virginia Beach writes, since we'll probably never see a current franchise like a 2D Metroid or Kirby on WiiWare, could this be a venture for new games featuring forgotten Nintendo characters? Old series like Duck Hunt, Clue Land, Balloon Fight could have new games without a lot of financial risk. Nintendo could experiment with new ideas without having to release it on a disc or cart. I would totally buy a new Ice Climbers game with better gameplay and updated graphics.
Yeah, this is something I don't really think that they've mined very much. I mean, I don't really know why they don't.
Maybe that'll come out after the art style games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they just don't start, remaking 8-bit games effectively.
Well, everyone
art
else
style,
is
making new ones.
On the train with you. Yeah. We've got Bubble
Art
Bubble
style
and...
Duck Hunt.
Art style Duck Hunt.
That would be awesome.
That would be.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. I mean, with the DSi, they've been really aggressive with that. I mean, every single bit of downloadable content on DSi is from them. Published by Nintendo. Obviously, a lot of it is made by Skipper, I think, with all this art style stuff. But, with the DSi, they've been absolutely firm that is going to be, like, their thing, whereas WiiWare, they never have been. And it's everyone else that's getting in on this remake, revival stuff. Like with Bubble Bobble and Mega Man, and presumably we'll see
Adventure Island.
Adventure Island, yeah. And I have Gradius Rebirth, which is out in Japan, but it hasn't crossed over anywhere else yet. And I have to think there'll be something Castlevania not too long.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
We'll see.
So I hate to bring it up, but what about Kid Icarus?
Oh, Factor
5, even though they're done, they're working on it, of course.
I don't know.
Working on a 8-bit graphics game.
I think, I wonder sometimes if there's somebody at Nintendo, NCL more specifically, who just really doesn't like the IGN crew and is intentionally letting these rumors get to them that this game is nowhere near in development.
Maybe the new Kid Icarus is just a reskinned Turrican.
Guys, what's coming up? Guys, Virtual Boy 2. Virtual Boy 2 is coming out. Spread the word. Matt in his blog next day, Virtual Boy 2.
Yes. I'd buy that, by the way. I might be the only person on Earth who thought the Virtual Boy was awesome.
I like it. It's physically painful to play, but Virtual Boy had a couple, at least two or three really good
Wario
games.
Land.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Wario is great. I wish I had a Virtual Boy just so I could play Wario.
They're dirt
once
cheap,
a year.
Man. Just buy them on eBay.
But then
the hard thing's finding the games.
Yeah, but like if I had a Virtual Boy in my house, what would people say when they saw it? I mean, how can you justify? That's like Austin Powers when they find the penis pump in his luggage. There's no way to explain that.
It's not my baby. It's not my Virtual Boy.
Just say it's a collection. Just a collected item.
But I don't collect games. Like anybody who comes over would see that. I don't really collect games, or certainly not weird hardware. So, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, like I mean, it doesn't bother me.
I don't know whether you're just not into this kind of a clandestine practice, but you could conceal it.
Yeah.
Much like you
there's
would
not a whole lot of hiding places.
Well,
throw a blanket over it and say, "Oh, I've just dismantled my easel."
Yeah, there you go. I've always wanted to live the lifelong dream of playing my Virtual Boy while wearing a power glove, and now I can.
Oh, dear. No, you're getting way too far into fetishistic territory.
Well, to bring it back around a little bit, it would be pretty cool if Nintendo could figure out a way to port Virtual Boy games to Virtual Console, because I have to think there's some kind of algorithm where you could combine the two images and make it, for some of them actually it might not really work because of the depth of field would be really hard to convey on a standard screen.
Yeah,
so maybe that might be pie in the sky, but
yeah, I mean, I guess, look, you can't argue with the question in terms of Nintendo certainly could experiment with new ideas and do all this stuff, but
and
it seems like it is tailor-made for that, but and other developers are already doing the same things with their properties, but Nintendo has displayed this ambivalence towards WiiWare generally. They've probably already published more stuff on DSiWare when it's been out for a few months, rather than nearly a year. That's just their attitude. I mean, the potential's there, but I mean, until we see any kind of movement out of them, I just don't know that we can reasonably expect.
Well, see, I actually am starting to think that maybe we shouldn't expect such a thing because of Punch-Out. Because I think Punch-Out as a game...
I can't wait for Punch-Out.
I think Punch-Out as a game could have been well-suited to being a WiiWare title.
It just depends on their ambition
we'll see how far they're willing to take it. But if it's just an update of Super Punch-Out, it probably should have been a Virtual Console game.
Well, we have no idea what they're doing with it right at this point.
Yeah.
I think all we've seen is so early.
Right.
You can't really draw much in the way of legitimate inference from that beyond the art style.
Right. All right. Well, Greg, you have the last...
Yes, this is from Eric in Minnesota, and he says, I'm currently getting a Japanese Wii. Who would do such a thing? For Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Really?
Once again, crazy.
Yeah, and I have reviewed and is up on the site if anyone wants to read
that. It's the cold, I'm telling you. The cold of Minnesota has racked his brain.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a cold snap here, so it could be that. Do you guys have any suggestions for Virtual Console, WiiWare, Japanese Wii exclusives, or even GameCube games that may be good that never came to the States? I'm interested in all types of games, maybe except puzzle. I am the choice to field this question, I suppose. But first thing with Virtual Console, if you think we've got a lot of shooters everywhere else, the Japanese have more, far more. It's pretty crazy. They've got whole franchises with multiple games in Japan on Japan's Virtual Console that have been ignored elsewhere, like the Darius series. You've got some pretty cool PC CD conversions with cop rock soundtracks and stuff. So
awesome!
I really like Darius Twin for Super Nintendo. That did.
Yeah,
come
that's
America.
One of the ones they
it's
haven't
really
done
good.
Yet. I think it's just the ones on the Hudson platforms that they've got to so far. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that in the shooter area. Although you still haven't got stuff like the Thunder Force series, which I think is what a lot of people
Thunder
really
Force.
Want to see. From the shooter fans. Also, you do have a lot of RPG, tactical RPG kind of stuff that you wouldn't get, but of course the language barrier comes into play there. So I don't know whether Eric has any experience with trying to muddle through that. But
well, the obvious suggestion would be Rondo of Blood.
Rondo of Blood is the first thing I downloaded when I got my Japanese Wii going. It's an absolutely excellent game. I think it stands up very well. Tremendous fun, Great music. I mean, if you're anything of a Castlevania fan, I'm sure it will please you a great deal. There's loads of fan service in there. Terrific, great stuff. And it stands up on its own merit as well. So if Eric isn't experienced with Castlevania, you could still enjoy it. WiiWare is kind of tougher to assess because there's not, for the stuff that's just in Japan that hasn't come out elsewhere, there's not necessarily a lot of coverage of that. So it's kind of difficult to know like what's good of the stuff that's just in Japan. One of them is Gradius Rebirth that I mentioned earlier, which isn't meant to be that great, unfortunately. Apparently it's more of like, it's not so much Gradius Rebirth as Gradius Remix, because it's very much like levels from previous games kind of slightly rejigged with sort of
regurgitate.
Yeah, like high-end 16-bit graphics, but still got slowdown and stuff. Like, you know, it's not a technical wonder, and it doesn't run in 16:9, and so it's not really quite like a Mega Man 9 thing where it's like super faithful, but at the same time, it doesn't really like stand up to like the kind of, you know, modern standards either. So it's like this weird halfway house, and it's not meant to be that brilliant. So I can't really offer that much on WiiWare right now. And in terms of the games, we did do the episode at the end of last year where we talked about some of the games that have come out in Japan that have yet to come out elsewhere, of which Tatsunoko vs. Capcom is obviously one, and some of the others were Skycrawlers, the sort of Ace Combat-ish game, and the Klonoa remake, which is going to be coming to America. Do we have a date for that?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it shouldn't be too long.
It's definitely coming, but maybe if you could find a good deal at it for the Japanese version, you could get to play it a little earlier. I don't think the language would be a particular problem with that.
No. No. There's not even any English in it, I don't think. Yeah. I don't think there's any text at all. I think it's all sort of pantomime cutscenes, but...
And then you've got, I think a lot of people are talking about Fragile, that RPG from Namco right now, which apparently is somewhat playable, even with muddling through the Japanese text, and it's meant to be pretty good, and there's a lot of people that want to see that come out elsewhere, so that's another thing to consider. But for me, the Virtual Console is the by far the biggest thing, because the library is much, much more vast. It really is. If you're really into the old school games, it's terrific.
The part about GameCube games threw me off a little bit because I hadn't considered that, but I guess with a Japanese Wii, you can play Japanese GameCube games.
I have
a modded GameCube, so I do own several Japanese GameCube games, but most of them came to America eventually. The one exception I can think of is like Kyojin no Doshin, which is Doshin the Giant.
Yeah,
yeah,
and if you could find a copy really cheap, I do think it's worth playing. It's interesting. I don't know if I'd call it a good game, but it's interesting. And the language barrier is really not much of a problem because it doesn't make any sense even in Japanese.
I mean, the only things I could think of are like really obscure stuff like that Animal Crossing with the SD support that you mentioned, Vitica.
Nobody would want that.
And Donkey Konga 3, there was a third one in Japan, but of course they're all different in Japan.
Yeah,
all those were different. So if you're a big Donkey Konga fan, that would be a good way to go.
The third Donkey Konga had several Famicom songs on it. That was kind of the thing with that. They had a lot of Nintendo themes from Famicom games. So if you like that part of it, maybe you'd like Donkey Kong 3.
So, I mean, I think there are a few oddities that you could get into as far as Japanese GameCube games. I'm not looking at my my game collection right now, so there's probably one or two more I could suggest. But for a long time I played Cubivore in Japanese, and that was really fun, but they did amazingly finally bring that to America. So
what a great game
it is,
or at least quirky.
With Giftpia, that one there.
Yeah, Giftpia has a very high language barrier though.
Yeah, as well.
What about,
of course,
Captain Rainbow?
Captain Rainbow apparently
Captain
has a
Rainbow.
Pretty heavy language barrier.
Yeah,
it can be muddled through to an extent, and of course there is a certain amount of assistance you could find online with.
Well, that's coming to the US anyway. We all know it.
Yeah, I mean the other thing, Fatal Frame is a big deal, but we assume that will come eventually.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know it's looking kind of dicey in some ways, but yeah. I think it will probably happen eventually. And of course, we can't get out of this without mentioning disaster. obviously, I already had access to it, being a European gamer and then getting a Japanese Wii. But being in Minnesota, Eric wouldn't have that pleasure. So that's got to be on the table.
What pleasure of having a European Wii is that?
the knowing that at any moment you could go out and buy Disaster Day of Crisis.
Oh, yeah.
And Disaster is in English, even the Japanese
version.
Yes,
that is completely playable. The Japanese version would be completely playable. There would be no real issues with that.
Okay, well, I would think that's plenty to chew on for Eric. So we're going to wrap up listener mail, but remember, you can send your letter or question to be possibly read on the show to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we definitely appreciate all the letters we've gotten. So now we're going to move into Retroactive. This is game number 2, Luigi's Mansion, as voted on by you, the listeners. We played it. We do your bidding here on the show. We play the games you tell us to play. And we, all 5 of us, played Luigi's Mansion this past week to some extent.
Yep.
So I have a few comments from people in the forums who've been playing along with us. And actually, these are definitely not all of them. We'll talk about it somewhat next week at least, and get into a few more forum posts. But to start off with, I don't know. What are your initial thoughts of it, or what are your revisited thoughts of it?
It still looks pretty good for a GameCube launch game.
It was in terms of just looks, some of the effects that they were able to get out of the GameCube were really impressive.
Yeah, like when he opens up the door and he shines his light in, that looks really, really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice.
I still always love the little the hand of the doorknob.
Yeah,
that's
very
too
charming, isn't it? Where he's so nervous that he's shaking a little.
Yeah.
Very sweet. I mean, it's nice for me to be able to play it in progressive scan now. Because the colours are so... I was playing through S-Video before.
Yeah.
But I haven't played this game in about 7 years, virtually. And the lighting effects when you're actually capturing a ghost and the colours and all that, they all come through very much more vibrantly. So it's nice to see it presented as well as it can be at this point. And it does hold up very well. I mean, it's very much the quintessential launch title because it's pretty showy, and obviously, like, it's trying to use absolutely everything on the GameCube pad. The dual analog is a big part.
Yeah.
You can use the analog buttons on the shoulder thing
the
when you're expelling fire or ice or whatever out of the vacuum. So it tries to use everything, and it's demonstrating everything, and the way that all the objects have like physics that respond to the vacuum and all. These details that are very much like new generation, look at what we can do, you know, which is not necessarily what I normally expect from a Nintendo launch title.
Right.
You know, Super Mario World was not like that, you know?
Hitting on something very key there, I think, Greg, which is that Luigi's Mansion, to me, does not really feel like a Nintendo game for a lot of reasons. And that's not to say that I don't like it or that it's bad, but it's just very different from what you would expect from Nintendo in terms of there's a lot of sort of artificial structure over the game where it's
absolutely,
you know, it's always counting how many ghosts you've had. There's a discrete limit to it's obvious where the game is going to end because it tells you how many ghosts you have to capture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're constantly checking the map. I mean, you're pretty much required to play the game.
Yeah.
You're constantly
looking
at this map and rotating it around and getting lost. The game is very directionless. You know, unless you just got a key, it's not really clear where to go next, and you kind of have to do some wandering. And there have actually been a couple points where I had to go to GameFAQs just to figure out what to do next because it's that loose.
Yeah, I never ran into that situation. I always felt like it was pretty. It wasn't that it was really clear where I needed to go, but I never really was just aimlessly lost.
I think if you stuck with it, it wouldn't be much of a problem.
No,
obviously, you know, when you're trying to get through as much of the game for this feature and things, you know, your tolerance for that sort of thing isn't going to be that great. And some people some people may actually feel that way if they weren't playing it for a podcast feature, because they have demands on their time or whatever. I think it's a legitimate point. And there's some places, I noticed you brought this up in the forum thread, Johnny, and I had exactly the same experience, for instance, where it's kind of a bit oblique what's going on exactly. Like, there's a bit where you go into the well and you get your first glimpse of what's happened to Mario in the plot, but afterwards, you sort of, I just went, a ghost sort of pops out, like many ghosts pop out in the mansion and sort of like just frightens Luigi, and then it just goes away.
Right.
And you just think, well, that happens all the time. Those ghosts are inconsequential. But it turns out you actually have to catch that one for it to sort of complete the little well level, and then you get a key and can continue on. Had exactly the same experience, wandering around like, what the hell, you know?
See,
what do I do now? Was, there's no key.
It was funny because I actually caught that ghost not realizing that that was what was going on. So I didn't.
Yeah,
have
we
that
could just as easily do that.
Yeah, because... so I didn't have that experience. Everybody else did. What the hell am I supposed to do? Because I just sort of went right through.
See, well, the thing is, the well comes at a late enough point in the game that at that point you've probably played enough that you're probably starting to ignore the ghosts that you know don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that ghost is the same character model as a bunch of other ones that don't matter. So there's no indication that, yes, you have to vacuum up this ghost in order to make the game move forward.
See, I just wiped out everything. I was going full-on Ghostbuster on this shit. Nothing's been wrong. But I actually have an interesting story about when I got that game and why I remembered it. I mean, I kind of – what I played for this feature, I kind of blitzed through pretty easy because I remember the game really vividly, in part because I got it for launch. So I actually got my system on launch day. Mm-hmm. But it was a gift, so I could only play it for launch day. Then I had to put it away until Christmas time. But you know, I got it down every day when my parents weren't home after I got home from school and played it. So I'd actually beat the game like 2 full weeks before I quote had it. So I actually ended up playing it multiple times because it was the only game I had, and I couldn't justify buying another game because supposedly I wasn't playing the system. So playing Luigi's Mansion with an element of danger behind it. And jumping, thinking maybe you didn't hear someone come home, sort of added to the feeling of playing that game.
That would heighten the experience.
Yeah. It really did. And there are more than a few times I packed up the GameCube back into its original box, which is a feat, which is not a small feat, in under a minute.
Whoa.
Wow. That is impressive.
Pretty impressive, James.
I think the Marine Corps should recruit James. He'd be very good at disassembling and reassembling his volume.
Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things about Luigi's Mansion is that a lot of the game mechanics, to me, and maybe this is to pad out the game, because obviously it's a fairly short game anyway, but one of the interesting things I found is that the game often asks you to repeat the same action multiple times in order to proceed. There are rooms where you go in and there'll be a certain kind of ghost. Maybe he throws bananas at you or something. And you have to fight him, and then after he's gone, another one comes out. And you end up having to fight 3 or 4 of the same type of ghosts in order to clean out that room and get a key.
Yeah.
And they're all the same. You're just doing the same thing over and over. Some of the bosses, especially the third boss where you're fighting the Boolossus or whatever it is, Boo that splits up into a lot of other ones, it's very repetitive. I mean, once you know what you're doing, it's just a matter of doing it over and over and over until you finally get all the boos, and then that's just the end of the boss.
Mm-hmm.
But the you know, there's a lot of backtracking, which you don't normally think of as being part of Nintendo games, except maybe Metroid. But there's quite a bit of backtracking, especially
but
as you
but
go
the difference
hunt down
is,
the boos.
As we've kind of talked about with respect to Metroid, when it happens in Metroid, usually there's some element where you are now able to do different things when you're backtracking.
Right. And that's,
whereas with
that
Luigi's
doesn't
Mansion,
happen, Luigi.
That really isn't the case.
Yeah.
You pretty much have all the tools that you need at the first.
Yeah, I mean, it's, apart from picking up the ability to use the fire, ice, water, which aren't particularly prominent, they're not used very often.
Very specialized use.
You don't change the gameplay doesn't really change, does it? I mean, it is very much the same thing over and over again. And the funny thing is, even though it's a short game, the amount of repetition involved, as Johnny said, it makes it feel quite slow.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's a short but slow game. So
the real
substance to it is actually spread pretty thin.
Yeah, I mean, it's really built around one concept. I mean, it's almost like they said, all right. Wouldn't it be cool if you could suck up ghosts like this?
Well,
and they just built an entire game around that concept.
Yeah, the dual analog aspect being a big, you know, sort of a proof of concept of how you could use the two sticks in a gameplay setting.
I think it even goes beyond that. I think they saw the graphical effects the GameCube could do, and they tried to think of what would be the best way of showing that, and they thought, well, a dusty old mansion with ghosts, we could really use some of these effects really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's right that, you know, as we know in Nintendo, they're not that concerned about narrative or concepts. Or it usually comes out of some sort of, you know, technical or gameplay parity, some sort of idea. And in this case, yeah, it was purely showing off what the GameCube can do. That was the concept. And mm-hmm. I think obviously the Luigi, like the choice of Luigi as the vehicle, was indicative in the sense that, you know, they were kind of conceding that this isn't substantive enough to have Mario in it. But we want to kind of infer that it's sort of like that, so we'll use Luigi.
Yeah.
Because it is a launch title.
You hear that a lot when people talk about this game, is that, you know, it's kind of an inferior game for the inferior character. But
I wouldn't
the
say
other
so
thing...
much inferior as it is different.
It's,
you know?
A, it's a spin-off it's as... game.
I would be
not
thrilled.
I think it's definitely
it's inferior,
Sunshine.
Well, yeah, I think it's, but I mean, in Nintendo's mind, I'm not talking, the decision was about kind of establishing in people's mind that you should have different expectations from this game as Nintendo's launch vehicle.
Well, the funny thing is that when people introduce Luigi's Mansion, or people talking about it, and we saw this in the forums multiple times, people always bring up the fact that it seems like it was designed to show off dual analog controls, which I find hilarious because I think the dual analog controls are really bad. I think it's not the game to show off that style of control at all.
Very rigid.
It's not so bad.
It's the fact that the camera is fixed perspective. So, and like, for instance, if I push right on the C-stick, Luigi doesn't necessarily just start pointing right. He's going to rotate rightwards depending on where he's already looking, and he rotates quite slowly. So you can push right in order to make him go from pointing into the camera to pointing away from the camera, and he may never actually face right as you see him. It's just very kind of confusing.
It's just tank controls. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's
right. But
you know, you're pointing the turret one way, and you're driving the tank independent of that. I mean, it is the definition of tank controls.
But you could say the same for, say, Geometry Wars, which you play with two sticks. But it's not. You're not rotating with the right stick. You're just aiming, and that's the thing. Luigi's Mansion is a game about aiming, but the aiming blows.
It really does,
because you're having to rotate into an aim every single time.
Yeah.
You can't just point the flashlight where you want it to go. It's very slow Resident Evil
style.
The
biggest issue is the turning speed. If the turning speed were faster, it wouldn't be such a problem that he does have to rotate. But because it's quite slow, that's where it feels cumbersome. And I think the reason why it was slow was probably because they thought if it was too sensitive, people wouldn't be able to control it. So they played it really safe and had this slow turn speed. But then, especially for us now, when we're very used to dual analog stick control, it just seems like, well, you know, you're not utilizing it as you could do. Whereas I think Nintendo there were trying to hedge their bets a bit and say, well, you know, it's not going to be as functional as it could be, but it's going to kind of ease people into it a bit because it's not going to be like super responsive.
Yeah.
Well, there's another thing about capturing the ghost that doesn't make any sense to me, and maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe you guys can educate me on this. But so many times I see the ghost, I go up to him, or I just turn to face him so I can shine my flashlight on him, and his heart will show up. And as soon as I do, he disappears.
Yeah.
So I don't even get a chance to start sucking him.
Yeah, it's proximity. It's proximity.
The purely proximity? Because it seems to happen sometimes when I'm right up in his face.
I wouldn't say that it never happens when you're quite close, but it's much less frequent. So it's kind of like, you know, the closer you are, the more likely it is to get that kind of that lock.
I mean, you're
right, Johnny.
I couldn't see any rhyme or reason
to it,
but I'll try
that. It does happen a lot, and it does happen
to me.
It does seem to happen even if you are quite close, but it just happens less often. And again, that contributes a lot to the slowness of the gameplay, in my opinion. I mean, not only are you catching the same ghosts multiple times, but you're pretty much having to sort of... Because there's quite a significant delay when that happens between the ghost disappearing and reappearing.
Yep.
You just have to wait.
So, I mean, if you were being kind of cynical about it, you might think even that was the idea that you wouldn't, that it was kind of probabilistic whether you would actually get the lock was another padding element. I mean, but maybe that was not really the intention. I don't know.
I just find it to be frustrating because I'm basically doing it the right way and yet I can't capture this ghost. I have to wait and do it again. And sometimes it goes on and on and on. Yeah, I'll try that, though. I'm sure that'll help.
Yeah, other than the proximity, there's nothing further you could be doing. Mm-hmm. If you know
yeah.
what I mean,
yeah. yeah
there's
so.
there's no better way that you would be doing it that would actually increase the likelihood of never having to deal with it just disappearing. So I mean, it's a very valid point.
It contributes to my overall feeling of Luigi's Mansion is that the mechanics are really shitty, but the game gets by on its charm because it has great graphics, it has interesting sound
very,
design,
very charming.
The animation is great. That whole idea of Luigi fighting ghosts he's very afraid of. Is really great, and because of that, I'm cool with playing it. But in terms of like how well the game plays and how well it controls, I think it's one of the poorer examples from Nintendo that I've ever played. I just don't think it plays very well.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's not terrible; it's tolerable.
I disagree.
I think it holds up poorer in retrospect. I think that to me is, I think at the time I didn't. Have the same dissatisfaction with the responsiveness of the controls that I do now.
See, I remember having the same feeling even back then.
I feel like if they snap to attention when you use the analog sticks, if you just immediately snap there, it wouldn't be right, if that makes sense.
Maybe not, but maybe there's a happy medium.
Well, he's scared. He's supposed to be moving slow. That's the thing. You say you like the charm so much, but I think that a lot of the charm comes from, you know, that the control style. Yes, it isn't perfect, but if he moved really quickly, it wouldn't really make any sense, and I think it would kind of ruin part of the
charm. I disagree.
Game.
No, I mean, I think Luigi being startled, being scared of the ghost is part of the charm. But if I was in that situation and I was really scared, I wouldn't take forever to point my one weapon at the ghost so I can get rid of it. That would be the first thing I do. My survival instincts would take over. It just doesn't make sense that he obviously knows a ghost is there, but then it takes him so long. I don't think that has anything to do with the
yeah,
character.
It's
a
game design
tuning.
Issue. It's not. It's
yeah.
not about it being.
It's a controls thing.
It's not about it being coherent with the narrative or anything like that. I mean, I really think it was just them being safe about the tuning and you know I think certainly now you would prefer it to be very much more sensitive. But mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the charm of the game. He does do a good job. I like how they kind of milk a lot of these different scenarios out of the mansion, all the different kinds of rooms that you get, like the gym or,
the ballroom.
Yeah, you get a few, like, sort of nice little sort of Mario references, like you get the ghosts that are a lot like Shy Guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so
and the different puzzles of how to capture the portrait ghosts are pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to vary up the general idea of capturing ghosts. Even
that's
though
where,
Luigi's
I mean, that's
abilities
where,
don't change, your tactics have to change.
Yeah, that's where I think the game's most successful. Some of these adventure game-ish kind of elements, like you're sort of like prodding things with the Game Boy horror, to get little hints.
Yeah,
the
Game Boy horror is great.
Yeah. And of course, you know, then these puzzles that you actually get to solve, you know, like if you've got a sort of, was it the one that's like a ghost in the bath? And you have to actually sort of make the water cold for it to come out, and then you can capture it. And the other thing that's really funny about that is the silhouette of the ghost behind the shower curtain is very shapely and attractive. But then, of course, once you pull the curtain, it's this big, bloated, fat ghost.
Yeah.
It's a great touch.
Yeah.
All right, well, we should get into these forum comments, and then we have to wrap up the show. Neil, you had something?
I got one quick comment that actually Luigi's Mansion, seeing a demo before GameCube came out, actually got me to go to Planet GameCube for the first time.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
I remember that right during this conversation, but that's what led me to Planet GameCube for the first time. So
nice.
Hopefully I'll write up something nice for the 10-year anniversary about that.
Kudos to Luigi's Mansion.
Well, all right.
Speaking of before the game came out, I got to play this at E3 2001 before GameCube was released, and as you might expect, I had more fun with it in that demo than I did when I played the full version a few months later.
Yeah.
It holds up better in a 10-minute session than it does over 2 hours.
It makes a great first impression, definitely.
It does, yeah.
Yeah,
it was one of my favorite games that E3, along with Smash Brothers and whatever, but... Yeah, when I got home, I never did buy it until just a couple weeks ago, but I rented it after the first couple weeks, and I was like, wow, this is, I don't know, it's a very curious entry in Nintendo's history of first-party development, I think.
Yeah, it's just so kind of tech demo-y. I mean, it reminds me of, do you know, like Mario 64, the whole Bowser fight thing? It's like, oh, look, you swing him around with the analog stick because we've got an analog stick and it's 360 right. degrees. That really wasn't a legitimate basis for all three of the game's major bosses, and they were all the same. And the in same. Some ways, Luigi's Mansion kind of feels like a whole game that's a bit more like that right. in terms of, like, a bit too, you know, in love with the idea of exploiting what you can do now, and did not necessarily the most sort of creativity to pad that out. But I still liked it at the time. It is the charm, I think, and it does have a certain essential kind of fun element to it. So it's not a classic by any means, but I think it's a fun little game.
It's a curiosity, at least. And it's funny you bring up Mario 64, because I think that game really set our expectations of a Nintendo first-party launch title way too high, and that's something that Luigi had no chance of living up to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if they'll ever live up to that again.
Strategy,
with a launch
didn't
title.
They had more games early on, you know, Nintendo.
That's right.
So that's right. Whereas it was Mario 64 and Pilot Wings, which Pilot Wings 64 was developed by Paradigm, not right. by Nintendo. So
yes, the infamous two-game launch.
Yeah, forever.
Mahjong in Japan, I
think. The problem there was they had no third-party development for 64 launch. They had a very good third-party
development.
Or
for the 64.
But, you know, right. when you think of GameCube in the launch window for America, you had Pikmin, Luigi's Mansion, Melee. You know, it was very much more sort of...
Because Melee was only, like a month later?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And Pikmin 2. They came out in December. Yeah, December 10th, I think. So, all right. Anyway, form comments. John has the first one.
Hold on.
God, John.
No,
I knew that was coming.
My excuse here is I got this new
version
of... It's
a shtick now.
No.
It's just that's what it is.
My excuse, I got this new version of Skype, and it has an entirely different layout, and it's just annoying.
The
right.
text has a different layout?
No, the chat window does. The chat window does.
It's the main part of the chat window. The
James.
Chat part that puts the word chat in chat window. James.
Let it lie. Let it lie.
Just let it lie. All right. Mr. Adolf Vega posted, I remember I was getting headaches, although he spells it, it's apparently headaches.
Yeah, I guess that's headaches.
When I first played the game. This was my first dip into dual analog controls, and it was difficult to get my mind around operating two joysticks at the same time. That feels like it was 100 years ago. Now that control style is second nature. I was proud of my purchase because the graphics were so clean and pretty. It's shameful to think that 80% of Wii's current games can't compare to a launched GameCube game from 8 years ago.
Oh!
you knew somebody was going to bring that up. And I can't really argue with that.
Yeah, but that's because of the preponderance of cheap shite on
right.
Wii.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know,
right.
In terms of the games that are on the upper end, or if we're comparing like Nintendo games, they look quite a lot better, actually,
in the
case of, well, Mario Galaxy, certainly.
Yeah.
But I think that's not just a dig at Wii games. It's also a compliment to Luigi's Mansion. As we said, it has aged very well. It still looks good.
Mm-hmm. But that is one of the central virtues of the game. And obviously with the fixed cameras and all that, it kind of better look that good.
Yeah
exactly. All right. The Fleece posted, the puzzles are cool, and the freaky scientist in the shed, he's pretty creepy, but at least he's on your side. I like the sound for his speech, though, half rasp and creepish cute, like a Tom Waits me.
His voice really annoyed me.
I had to put that in there because I think the mental image of Tom Waits having a me is so great. But yeah, that's Professor Egad, and of course he returns in Mario Sunshine and I think a couple other games.
Well, he's not actually in Sunshine, is he? He's just referenced.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, because he made the water gun and the flood.
Bowser Jr.'s brush is also by Egad.
Yeah, but I didn't really like the voice of him in this game. It really annoyed
me.
It's kind of like the gibberish.
It was quiet enough not to get on.
It's like the baby boss, too. Very annoying.
It's that kind of banjo, kind of, gobbledygook.
The gibberish.
Rayman type stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Okie doke, James.
So, Sundulus writes, on the whole, Luigi seems a bit stiff, slow, and very grounded. In a Mario-style game where you can expect to run, jump,
and explore, but Luigi's Mansion just couldn't live up to those expectations, given the way it was designed. We finally got the game featuring Luigi, and it wasn't exactly what most of us wanted.
I think obviously we'll agree. We've agreed that he's stiff and slow.
But
and
see,
all
I,
that.
I accept that, but I disagree with the premise.
Yeah, I mean, because the point I was making earlier was that the fact that it was a Luigi game cemented for me this was going to be nothing like Mario.
Yeah.
And I think it's better that it's nothing like Mario.
Exactly. You know, that it wasn't like, oh, great, now we get to play a Mario game just with Luigi from the start. That was never my expectation. It was not the signal that was sent to me.
Yeah.
Even if I hadn't been reading impressions and watching videos on Planet GameCube and all that back in the day, I wouldn't have thought that, but maybe some people did. I'm not saying it's an illegitimate way to think, but you know, it doesn't strike me as that's the natural thing to think.
I think the assumption that this is going to play like a Mario game would only come if you paid absolutely no attention to the game as it was being announced and covered, because
that
would be most of the people who bought it.
Yeah, because I knew full well going in what I was getting into, and if you looked at the cover, I think you could see this.
Yeah, that's the thing. I honestly think just that obviously, if you actually go into it in any level of detail, it's going to be immediately apparent. But even just the fact that it's using Luigi, it's called Luigi's Mansion, and you know the ghosts on it and all that, it seems pretty clear this is not. You know, it seems to me this is not going to be necessarily that much like Mario, but I suppose it might be natural to think that it might be more of a different take on a Mario game rather than something that is completely different from a Mario game.
I would say it has more in common with a Wario game.
Yeah, think, oh yeah, definitely.
There's so much of the game is about collecting money, which doesn't seem to have any purpose at all, and you're constantly collecting these little knickknacks that come out of everything. That's very... un-Mario.
It's a grading system, isn't it? Because when you finish the game, you get a mansion.
It's like the points in Professor Layton.
Well, if you think about it, that house needs a lot of work. That money's important.
Well, the house doesn't even exist, apparently, but the money's real.
Well, that's true.
Alright, well, Greg, you have the last comment.
Yeah, I have the last one from someone called TYP. And it's a game of details and charm. Much like scanning your Metroid Prime, exploring the mansion's intricacies and the physics is part of the fun and extends the game's life. I guess it's true. If you weren't prodding around with a Game Boy horror and seeing that you can sort of suck the tablecloths off the tables and all that sort of stuff with the vacuum, you probably would be going through it rather quicker. So I think that's a pretty good point. And again, I mean, those were the sorts of things that were really fun at the time, just to mess around with, kind of exploring, you know, what the new generation was going to be like. And there's some funny little references with the Game Boy horror, some of the answers it gives, like when he's in the toilet and if you scan the toilet, it says, wow, these ghosts really went into detail with this fake mansion. You know, and things like that. So it's the kind of Mario-ish kind of humour used in the Game Boy horror and stuff. So we talked about this very point quite a lot, didn't we? That it is about the charm, especially at this point when the technical sort of wizardry is not going to wow you in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question about the Game Boy horror. I avoid using it as much as possible unless there's a ghost that I just can't figure out how to start working on it, you know? I find it kind of difficult to aim at what I want to learn about, and one of the really strange things is every time I press X to bring up the Game Boy horror, it suddenly jerks off to one side, or it goes straight down or something. Do you guys find that?
Mm-mm.
It's like I'm not touching the joystick. I just push X, and he brings it up, and then all of a sudden it kind of jerks off to the side.
It usually happens when there's a ghost in the room, too, and then I get a hit. That sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, the interface of using the Game Boy horror is kind of weird.
I wish it paused the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
a point. Good point.
Well, I mean, it doesn't pause the game in Metroid Prime when you're scanning.
No, but you can move and scan at the same time.
Yeah, and it's built into the HUD already.
You're not a sitting duck in Metroid Prime. So, yeah, it's just weird. Again, it's kind of a neat twist on Mario, because if you think about, like, Mario 64 or Mario Sunshine, they always have this element where you can stop and look around and basically in first person, and it's never really useful. And in Luigi's Mansion, they kind of made that part of the game.
Yeah.
It's not really required, but you're probably going to use it at some point. But it's the only camera control in the game, really.
Yeah, everything else is fixed, yeah. And that helps you sort of, you know, get a look around some of the environments. So, again, as you said, I don't think it's required for any of the puzzles. Like, there's certain puzzles, like, you'll have to be observant. Like, maybe you can see a reflection in a mirror that shows you the wall you can't see. Like, you know, the sort
that's
of
a
the
tough
wall,
puzzle, yeah.
You know, things like that. But, the Game Boy Horror isn't required for any of those. So, like, you see, it's a kind of a fun little toy kind of element to the game.
And it's got a funny name.
Yeah, that. I'm sure if we have a sequel, they could have the DS Fright or whatever. They'll probably do something similar. Well,
if you think about it, by the time Luigi's Mansion was released, Game Boy Advance was already out. So the Game Boy Color, which is clearly the butt of the joke here, was kind of, you know, I mean, certainly plenty of people owned one. But it wasn't the newest thing. It's not really much of a cross promotion at that point.
No, but I guess they couldn't crowbar the pun in with Advance. I suppose that was the problem.
Well, and maybe, you know, it was kind of a joke about Luigi too. Would Luigi have the most modern system? No.
This would probably be true of a GBC as well, but you certainly would have absolutely no chance of seeing what the hell was on the GBA screen in that mansion anyway.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. We can't leave the issue of the game's charm without talking about the infectious main theme, though. The tune.
The music is very, very catchy.
It's old school. Like, it's very much Mario World used the same theme for everything. There was no other theme, regardless of whether you're in the castle or underground or whatever, is the same theme. And this is kind of the same thing, and he's whistling it or he's sort of humming it nervously, yes, or that. Again, but it's just a really, really catchy piece of a really catchy tune, and that adds a lot to it.
I love that he participates in the music.
Yeah, I like that it's there at all times, even though it's not always, you know, it's not just playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the different ways that they kind of work it in. Sometimes, like, when you're outside, it's kind of a lonely little piano version, and then when you're inside, it's Luigi himself doing it, and they mix that up really nicely, and that's great. And of course, it got a really great full kind of rendition in Brawl.
Yeah.
Good music all around.
Well, we need to wrap it up, and I guess this is the end of the show, so... Thanks for being here. It's been a long show, and definitely, I know. Yeah, I want to thank everybody for playing along in the forums. Like I said, we didn't get to all the forum comments that I want to, so we'll talk about this a little bit next week at least, and read off some more comments. So that means there's still time for you to jump in there and leave your thoughts about Luigi's Mansion if you want to argue with something that we said today, and you probably do. Then maybe we'll read it on the show next week. So, that's all. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.
It is working.
New business.
All right, seriously, who just dumped out a bag of kibble on the floor? What the hell was that?
Kibble?
It's what it sounded like.
Not me.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Neil.
It was not me.
Christ.
Greg?
No, afraid not.
Well, I don't know who it is. It's not me.
What the fuck?
I hear it too.
There's somebody else.
There's another person on the call, and this guy from inside the house.